Hello, folks, and welcome back to The Runtime. I'm your host, Raphael Kennedy, and this is the podcast where we go deep into software design. Before we get started, I wanted to introduce my guest, Angelo Theodorou, aka Encelo, an Amiga and demo scene lover, an Arch Linux and 3D graphics enthusiast, and game industry programmer. Welcome, Angelo, and thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thank you very much.
So, before we get started, could you actually tell me a little bit about what a game engine is?
So, nowadays for game engine, people really think of content creation application, like something that you open that has like a window over your world, and then you use your mouse and you pick stuff and you put inside the window and things will pop up inside the world. You can navigate it, and then depending on your role, you might add some code or maybe not, depends. So it's many different things, I would say, today. So people will usually think of like Unity, Unreal, Godot. They all have an interface, and that's the way people actually use it. But it's not only this part, that's the editor. The engine has also like a runtime component, which actually loads the data that you create with the editor and then run it on the final platform, which can be console, mobile, whatever.
So I'm alluding to a project that I wanted to talk to you about called Encine.
Yeah.
And that's spelled N-C-I-N-E, but there will be links to it in the show notes. Could you give a little introduction to what Encine is?
Yeah, well, actually, even if it's you would see Encine is a multi-platform, cross-platform game engine or whatever, it's really similar, more similar to what today would be called a framework. So think of a library which has an API, and you use this API, and that's it. Something similar to what Cocos was before the Cocos Creator, I think it's called, the new 3D editor, which has all the bells and whistles. Or think about Love2D, think about Monogame, for example, or the old XNA. It's something more similar to that, I would say. And has more features than simpler library than like SDL or SFML, which are very basic, but less than something which has like an editor, like, so less than Godot, more than SFML, let's say.
Okay. What would you say is the reason that Encine needed to exist?
Very personal reasons. As I have written in my post that you have surely read, so my latest blog article, it was something for me to feel as an engine programmer. So this all started 10 years ago when I started to work, actually, and I started to work in the industry in a small indie studio in Italy, where I was doing everything but what I liked. So I wasn't doing any graphics, or I wasn't doing any engine, low-level stuff, console programming. I was just doing GUI programming on whatever platforms you can imagine, from iOS, ActionScript to do PlayStation, Bada on Samsung, which is now dead, Qt4. So what I did was going back at home and trying to learn more about what I liked and trying to put together something useful for creating games. I already had my 3D OpenGL demos, which were my first approach with 3D graphics, and I liked them a lot, and they were also useful when I had my first interviews in the UK or in Italy. So it was both a learning process and also something to showcase, like today you would say to a young person who is willing to enter the game industry to like have a portfolio, show something. So that was I did. But the Encine was mostly for me, was a way to learn those things. So I started with the bare minimum in graphics and have everything else, everything which was around it. So to have something which was like complete, let's say, complete engine, minimal but complete. So sound, so deploy on the platform that you, that was a target platform, have like a build system which was saner than something super like small than my demos, which were just something had to be shown with the PC, and that's it. Was something that's very short lived. So I was willing to do something with more depth, and that's how it started. Actually, it was a long time ago, so I don't remember the whole process, but the history is there. So I should do someday go back and see everything and analyze how it became what it is.
Yeah, well, spoilers, I'm going to ask you some of that now. So this is, I mean, one of the things that's interesting here is I don't have any projects that I've been working on, you know, continuously for a decade. And, you know, I am a JavaScript developer primarily, so in my day job. Mm-hmm. So I'm working with, you know, languages and tools that have, within the last 10 years, are unrecognizable. Can you talk about what it was like to be working on this project as the technologies around it changed over time?
We can say that maybe the game development field is a bit slower to adopt new technology. There is a lot of resistance because, you know, it's going to affect performance, or we should take it very slow because maybe it's going to break on a compiler that you use or our console. You know, those were mostly things of the past, I think, like up to the PS3, Xbox 360 era. Nowadays, I would say that the game industry is going a lot faster, so they're picking all the new language evolution. Of course, we are talking mainly about C++, so they're taking the new standards that are coming out from the committee every 2-3 years. So, for example, in those 10 years, I started with the C++ that I knew about, which was not C++ 11, which was, of course, super very new at the time. And for example, I started with an old version of OpenGL, which was the base to be available everywhere. So for example, those two items in particular, yeah, they were they evolved with time. Actually, the render, I have written it a couple of times again. So OpenGL without shaders, then OpenGL with shaders, and then an OpenGL which was a bit newer, but still a base which was available everywhere. But again, I had to change some things, but I could take advantages of some new features. And for example, yes, C++, I adopted C++ 11 years ago, and with a branch of a few commits, I introduced only the things that I was valuing the most, the things that I thought, yeah, I'm going to use those. Yeah, I like those features. Then yes, I will adopt those. So it wasn't just taking everything. It was a selection of things, the most useful things that I think most of the people would use. And what is also noteworthy is that I have my own standard libraries, all my containers and all these things. So when I adopted C++ 11, I rewrote my unique pointers, shared pointers, and things like that. It's things that no one sane of mind would do. But for me, it was a very, very good way of learning those things, like how to use templates with C++, and how not to be scared by them. And I think I succeeded in that. So I'm very, very, I'm very proud, and I'm very happy about that. And we can also say that nowadays this library is pretty decent with performance. I have my unit tests, 1,500 unit tests, and tens of benchmarks to assure that it works as intended, and that against the STL is performant, or at least on par. I'm really giving importance nowadays. It started more or less like a joke, but today is a very important part of the project, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So were there features that came in later releases of OpenGL or other tooling that you used that you wished you had had early on?
I'm thinking about the integrations that I have with like third-party software, which came, I don't know, probably, I would say at the right time. At the right time being when I couldn't not use them. So they were so like, you know, I need those now. So I need to integrate, for example, a GUI system. And I have integrated IMGUI, which is DRM GUI specifically, which is like an immediate mode interface that many people use in this field because it's very easy to integrate and to do things like within your application. So have like an editor or a GUI embedded in your own game or engine or whatever. So many people use it. I have also a different GUI called Nuclear, which is a bit more skinnable. So I was thinking about it for like a game GUI, not for debug or an editor, because the one has more functionalities and the other one is like more beautiful. So I have two of them. And as I said before, my library has unit tests and benchmarks, and I use Google GTest and the Google Benchmark library for those. Then, for example, I have integration with RenderDoc to capture one frames and tells you everything. And with the new version of OpenGL, new back in the time when I rewrote the render for the third time, it was one of the thing, important thing that I gained with this step. But there is also like an integration inside my debug overlay. I have like a debug interface that you can pop up, you can invoke in your games or in my test, wherever you use this project. And you can do different things. One of the things is that, for example, you can say, okay, capture now, for example, or have some information from RenderDoc if you're running your program inside RenderDoc at that time. And then there is also Tracy, which is a frame profiler, which I like very much. I've used it a bit to understand what was happening from profiling for performance point of view. So it's not really like a statistical approach to profiling, but it's more like, okay, frame by frame, a great tool.
So you've talked a lot about performance, you know, being something that you're really focused on with this project. Are there other priorities that you had while developing Enzyme?
Well, priorities have shifted with time, as you can think, as you can expect. In the beginning was more, I do whatever I want because I like that, I like this, I want to explore this, I would like to see how this thing, like technological thing that I've just studied, if I can implement it and what it brings to my project. So it was more of really like an experiment. With time and with the release as an open source project, it shifted a bit. Also, the project became like more complete. So let's say, I think now you can do some easy, you can create some easy 2D games. So my priority shifted to enable others to use it. So documentation, which is always a pain. What I do at the moment is like extract documentation from inside the code with Doxygen and create at least a minimal documentation about the API, the classes and the function. That's the basic thing. I would like to have like videos. I would like to have article, documents, things explaining, but it's a lot of work. So that's, performance is important, but then if the adoption is really low, I mean, it became important now. I want people to use it. It wasn't just as it was in the old days, which was something just for me alone, and I was happy with that. Now that I've spent a lot of time and I made it open source, which it's all another story. It wasn't so easy, because when I wanted to do it, I couldn't do it. And now that it's there, I would like to see people using it. So that's my focus now.
So can you talk about any mistakes that you made, any decisions you made that ended up being counterproductive?
I don't know, more than things that I've done wrong, because I mean, the project is something which, for me at least, in my mind never ends. So I have rewritten things many times. So if there is something that I don't like, I have no problems actually, because there is no one collaborating, there is no one using it, so it's not a problem. I can rewrite everything, change the API. I don't have to support things backwards. So if I don't like something, yeah, I would just rewrite stuff. Also with my insane policy with commits, I would just rebase until my commit is in a decent state for me at least. So if I decided it's okay, then I go on. Because a lot of time you write something, you create something, you commit it, and you only see that something is wrong later. So it's very usual. I already know that's what I'm going to do anyway. I'm always going back and fixing things that I will notice a bit later. But that's kind of normal, and I don't have any problem because no one is using it, so I'm not affecting anyone other work with Git or whatever. So I mean it's okay.
You'll have to watch out, because you never know when people will start using it.
Maybe.
So I'm curious, what you said, you have an insane commit policy.
Yeah.
Can you say a little more about that?
I'm not really proud about it, because it's something I can't control. So it's like my a mania of perfection, or OCD, I don't know how to call it, but I don't like micro commits. I don't like, for example, I changed a comma, there were a typo. So if there is a typo, then I kind of wait until there is something more, and then I try to pack things together. So let's say, okay, if it's 4, 5 files, 6 files that I've touched, okay, it goes in a commit. I know that it should be like a commit based on like a logical commit, so that it has like a feature or a topic or something, fix something. So I know the theory, but that's another thing. And I use it when I'm at work, because I don't care about perfection. But then at home is more about, I don't know why, I actually have a commit like a micro release or whatever. So it has to work, of course. But not only that, I would like to pack more than just a typo together in a commit. And if I discover a problem later on, then I go back and I fix the release by rebasing it. So that if you look at history, it's 10 years and it's like 350 commits, not even 350. So it's not a lot, but every one of those, you can see that it's adding something. It's like, oh, there is mm-hmm. this thing, or I don't know, I fix something or I change something, which is some work usually. It only happens sometime when it's not a lot of work, it's something simple, but it's touching 5, 6 files, then I say, okay, this goes in a comment because it has a logical scope and it's touching some files. So let's not pack everything together. Maybe in the past I would have packed even more things together to have something like have more work, like a chunk of work before doing a comment, which is very insane. So don't judge me, please. I don't know why I'm doing
that. No, absolutely no judgment. I know that feeling, though, of wanting saying, this private project of mine is, this is where I get to be. I don't have to be a pragmatist. I lean into my
illnesses. Yeah.
Yeah.
Deviances.
Looking for a different word.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. So can you tell us what is next for Enscene?
My to-do is not a problem. It's like it's never ending. So I have small things. There are some tasks which are like only maintenance. So there is a new library. I don't know, one of the libraries that I use is, for example, OGG. I have a note that OGG has been updated, maybe supported, because I also have like accompanying a project which comes together with the Enscene in the GitHub organizations, and one of those is the library. So the libraries are not included. Someone does that. I don't include anything that can be generated. So libraries or object files are not included, but there is like a project with a CMake script that will create the libraries that you need on every platform if you want, so that you can then build the project without problems. So as things goes on and the world like doesn't stop, so I have all those small things to do, like, okay, new PNG, libPNG version, new Tracy, let's see if it works, a new IMGUI version. So those are the very small things. Even if I don't have anything on my mind, if I don't do anything, there is this minimal maintenance work just comes with time passing. Then there are some other small things. I have some users, so there is some feedback, and it's super valuable. So that's why I would like to have more users. So there are some things which I will or I have implemented because of feedbacks. Sometimes I'm not completely in agreement, of course, or maybe I discuss with the user, or I do things in a slightly different way. Then there are small quality of life improvements while using the project. Me or other people, I see, okay, I can do that. So I would do that, even if it takes, I don't know, one day, 2 days. We are still talking about the small things. Then I have bigger things. Bigger things, it's all a matter of time. And those are also, of course, the meaty changes, but also probably the more interesting. So they will be very satisfactory to have them. For example, if I want to port the Ensign on different platforms, an API, an abstraction API for graphics would be great. So, for example, to have Vulkan, to have Metal, and to have OpenGL side by side. That's one thing that I would like to do, which is like in long-term to-do list, whatever, or tickets on Trello or GitHub issues. Then, for example, another one is having a look at implementing an ECS system, more for a performance point of view, so data-oriented design system, so that I can, for example, update all my objects together, all the components of my entities together, and yield a great return in performance. Because at the moment, the GPU part is pretty, I would say, pretty optimized with automatic batching or with a reordering of commands to minimize state changes. All that is in the book. I'm trying to do it, so that's not a problem. But when you have a lot of sprites, the problem is the CPU. So that's why an ECS might help, an Ensign component system. So I'm looking into either that, or which is a long term, or something short term at the moment to make it more performant. Because yeah, it's 2D sprite plating library and has a bottleneck on the CPU when you bleed a lot of sprites, so it's not very like pleasant to have. So that's something I would like to see. And another area is trying to do something modern with that 2D graphics. So yeah, like pixel art, I like old style games, but I also like games with which has a new, which brings into pixel art things like, I don't know, depth of field or this like blur, this like of effects. So having custom shaders for users, that's something also that I've been asked by some users. So that would be a great thing. And it's not so big as the other thing. So it might be one of the next thing I'm trying to tackle. And also, for example, to have this kind of effects, also writing on off-screen render targets, which is a way to have to do more things with custom shaders. So those are the important things I'm thinking at the moment.
Okay. Can you talk a little about how folks can use Ensign now?
You have to talk with me. So I have to help you. The thing that I suggest at the moment is coming in the Discord server, because that's where a user would find me and other users. It's where people can help post screenshots or errors or whatever, because the problem is actually building the project itself, which actually can be skipped. You can always download the artifacts from GitHub Actions, so from the continuous integrations. So you can install the super latest version for all the supported platforms, or you can use Encline, which is my command line Ensign tool, which is a way to with some commands either in the Linux shell or the prompt on Windows or the shell on macOS, you can automatically download, you can compile the project has some commands that helps you, so you don't have to use CMake, which seems to be the problem for the majority of users. And then the other thing, even if you have the project compiled, which is a library, you want to set up your own project, so your own prototype, game, whatever. I have some template projects, Because if you want to do things in a way that it works everywhere, so that you can export the MScripten version and have it work in the browser, you want an Android version, you want macOS, Linux, Windows version, you want it compiled with GCC, you want it compiled with Clang, you want it on MinGW, you want all those different combinations, it's not hard, actually. You just have to use the template project. So you have to clone the project and then do some changes. And that's another thing I would like to change. I would like to put most of the files of the scripts or whatever that compose the this template project inside the Ensign itself, so that it kind of updates automatically. At the moment, for every project that I have like, I don't know, 10 projects, maybe more, like my example games or whatever. If I change something, for example, oh, Android doesn't build anymore because you have to do that now, I have to patch those 10 projects, and it's very, very painful. So that's another kind of big task, because every time I touch CMake, every time I touch a script project, something breaks. At the moment, at least now we have continuous integration. That's a super great thing when you need to test. I have like a matrix of, I don't know how many entries, more than 10 entries. You can test everything by hand. At the past, I tried to, but it was always something breaking. And, you know, you notice a lot later. So the good thing is that we have CI now. But still, when I touch the CMake, the building scripts, installation stuff, it's a lot of pain. So I'm prepared.
And are there other projects that you're seeing out in the world that you love or are inspired by?
Well, yeah, many projects, of course. You just have to see my start projects on GitHub. For example, some of them I've already mentioned, which are the ones that I use. For example, MGUI and Tracy. I really, really like those projects. Those are great projects, and those are also examples of... together with Tiled, don't forget Tiled, which is this great map and level editor. Those are great examples of something that I would like to do in the future if possible, which is like self-sustained with open source projects. And those are really like examples I'm looking at. Are great, are both super useful, and the people are very happy to use them. And there are a lot, the community is, it's big, it's great. So that's something I would aspire to do as well. I have my own small animation tool called Spooky Ghost, made with the Ensign, which is a base for games prototypes tools. So that's another example, works as another example for me, like, yeah, you can do tools as well. And it was in the beginning like a paid application, which failed miserably, of course. I like didn't sell many, like I can count on my hand, one hand. But I kind of made it completely open source and then free. So now the focus is building a community, have people using it. And then if they want to donate, open donations, they are free to do it, of course, not a problem. So I'm kind of changing my strategy, doing something similar to Tiled, for example, as I mentioned before.
All right. Well, I think that probably brings us to a close. Is there anything else of yours that you'd like to mention before we go?
Well, use the Ensign, download it, or at least start it on GitHub or do a donation. Whatever. No. Yeah. Really, if this interview like sparked your curiosity, the first point of like contact with the project would be probably the Discord server. So you can just ask questions, see by yourself what it is all about, and of course the website as well.
And we will link to all of these things. Thanks. In the show notes. Folks can get straight to the Discord invite that way. Well, thank you again for your time, Angelo. This was a great conversation.
Thank you for inviting me. Thanks.
Yes, of course.
I hope to have the strength to like work for another 10 years on the project, so that in 10 years we can do another interview.
In 10 years we'll come back around, yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good. Well, that wraps it up for this week on The Runtime. I remain your host, Raphael Kennedy. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe and, if possible, leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. It really helps to spread the word. If you have thoughts, feedback, or ideas of folks that I should interview for the show, please reach out either via email at raphael@runtimepodcast.com or on Twitter @podcastruntime. Thanks again for listening.